Welcome to another special edition of the Mac Show, the week in Apple tech news, and there is actually a lot going on. And yeah, I have a really great panel today. Starting us off, I'm going to go from west to east this time. Well, at least I'm going to try. So first one would be Doug, really early in the morning. He's like, woo!
How's it going? Good. It's we discovered summer. It's this new thing where it's hot as sin. It was so cool and lovely, and then the last 2 days have been just like face drip. It's hot. It's back.
Yeah, it's back.
I'm sad. Everybody else loves summer, but when you live in summer, you don't like the real summer, because the real summer means that's the hottest part.
Yeah, I mean, for you, that's still not that bad. It's probably very humid, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very humid. I feel like you're melting. Yeah, other than that, it's been good. It's chilling, keeping busy.
Yeah, that's always good. Next to him, I think time zone wise, it would be Jeff next, right?
Yep, that would be right.
So how's the zoo going? Any new animals added this week?
No new animals this week. I'm actually kind of disappointed because it's like the high point of the week for me when I find out what new animal has moved into town. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's just lots of people roaming the streets now.
Well, maybe that's the new species that has moved in. People are coming back.
Yeah, there's people coming back. And much to my surprise, I'm actually kind of disappointed with that. Well, I mean, my favorite bike bar is reopening probably tonight.
Nice.
And Chuck, if you can picture me in a bike bar, because it's Boulder, Colorado. So the whole backside of the place is a bicycle shop, and the front part is a bar.
Doesn't have the same panache, Jeff.
No, but they rotate the taps on a regular basis, so you always get to try something new.
Okay, then next to him, definitely Chuck Turner. I got my time zones all sorted out.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks, Patrice. Yeah, I don't know how to top Jeff's bike bar, because I'm in that weird zone working from home where you just lose track of what day it is, what week it is.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. You know, people say, oh, that's just terrible. No, it's not a bad thing, but it just, everything kind of looks the same day in and day out. And so you fall into a routine, and that can be good for productivity, can be not so good for some other things, come to think of it, at midnight, our county went to green, which means that we have 50% occupancy or capacity in restaurants now. They can be open, stores, same thing. You're still encouraging the masks and all, but so I think, like Jeff, we'll start to see signs of life start to come back in. And then I can determine, too, whether it's a good thing or not.
Yeah, you're right. It feels sometimes a little bit. It feels like we're still in March. Like it's March, whatever, March 94th or something like that today. No, actually 100. Actually, it should be over 100 now. Like it still feels like March, basically.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know where the time went. It just like we were in March and now we're in June.
It's like Marbuary 130.
Yeah, something like that. Eighth. Yeah.
When the funny thing is too that everybody said, okay, you might be in lockdown for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, and you were like, oh my God, how will I ever live? And now it's like, okay, I'm on the other side of it or hopefully on the back side of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that wasn't too bad. You know, maybe we should do this again.
I hope this fall.
This fall.
Yeah, exactly.
Solar winter. It's Jeff is October 48th.
Okay. We should invent a new calendar. I think that's a good idea.
And calendar.
Let's get started with that. Okay, last but not least, we have the man representing the great, or sometimes not so great, Britain. Well, right now it's great, right?
Oh, it's wonderful. Colin, it's wonderful. All good. It's all gone a bit mental over here. basically, everyone's ripping statues down. Mm-hmm. Some quite rightly, some not. In terms of lockdown, next week's a big week because non-essential shops are reopening. It's going to get an awful lot busier from Monday going forwards, I think. Everyone's got to wear face masks on public transport now. So they've brought that in and made it a rule. We're just kind of cracking on in terms of COVID, but that very much feels like it's taking a back seat at the moment. So, with an awful lot that's going on over here. So,
yeah, I mean, and we're going to talk later. We're going to talk about a repair you've done. That will be very interesting. Like, I saw that and I was like, oh my god, okay.
Yeah,
what's going on? So, well, yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Definitely.
Good. The week in tech, or the week in Apple, I should say. First things first, following up on last week's first discussion, Tim Cook or Apple has committed to a what they call a Apple racial racial equity and justice initiative. That's a mouthful. And they've committed $100 million. Easy for me to say. No, it's a $100 million fund, supporting quite a few causes. I always struggle with this kind of stuff a little bit. I mean, it's good, I think, on one hand that Apple is doing something. On the other hand, it's always borderline a little bit usually we'd call it whitewashing. Do you guys think this is like a genuine thing Apple wants to do, or is it more like, okay, everybody's doing it, so should we?
Both, but when everyone else does it, they don't have as much money as Apple, so they'll take it. Yes, what should have happened for most of these companies, and it's it's par for the course. It's not affecting me until it's affecting me. Mm-hmm. So that's just, this is normal to me, right? So to have them do it, and a lot of people, the people that are complaining the most are the people who didn't tell them to do it ahead of time too. So shut up. You know better than they are.
Yeah.
Because you didn't send letters to feedback.apple.com and say, hey, you know what would be really good is if you guys donated and worked on your higher diversity. Now, that being said, they have been one of the game changers, right? When Lisa took over environmental department, like, that was the talk of the town. And that was 2008, mm-hmm. right? And so was seriously, at that point, one of the highest women of color in entire tech field, right? Yeah. So don't be, you also can't be like, oh, Apple just made this up Tuesday, because they didn't.
No.
Right? Their CEO is the first high-level publicly out CEO. And, Lisa and I'm pretty sure Eddie Q isn't exactly classically Caucasian. they've been down this road for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Definitely Federighi's hair is a person of color. So... I don't know. Everybody shut up. Shut up. Keep your opinions to yourself, because if it is helping people, just let them help. Like, I didn't pick up an old lady off the street last Thursday, but if I saw one fall today, I would pick her up. Does that make me a bad person because I don't go around hunting old ladies in the street? No. But, Jeff, if you were there, I'd pick you up.
I appreciate that.
That's very nice. Yeah. I think it makes sense. You said it. I mean, Apple has said they're not doing enough, and they're internally checking basically everything. they said that the initiative will lead to changes that touch just about everything we do. And I believe them. I mean, they've shown to some extent with, like, especially keynotes and speeches and like presentations and so on, where, I mean, it used to be, well, either Steve Jobs and nobody else, or like Steve Jobs and maybe one or two other executives. And like especially in recent like 5-7 years, they've stepped that up, that game. Like, I mean, you see a lot more women, a lot more people of color, a lot more like people with disabilities, like basically like anything and everything, like whatever. I mean, truly representative of, I think, Apple and the wider world. And I think Apple says so, like there is more to do, and they're committed to doing it. And maybe that's the difference to other companies, where other companies might just throw a couple million in and say, okay, we did our thing.
Yep.
On the other hand, 100 million is not much for Apple. I mean, they make that in, I don't know, 3 days. Not quite, but...
isn't there something to be... I want to be careful with this, but you know, if they threw too much in, doesn't then it even look worse? I mean, doesn't it start to look like even more pandering that, you know, for publicity and all? Mm-hmm. I mean, 100 million seems to be very significant and also in line with maybe what some other companies are doing. And so would we be sitting here saying, gee, if they had pledged $1 billion or something, you know, crazy, well, they're just trying to buy publicity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you see what I mean? I want to be careful with that, because I'm certainly not against it, but I also think that, you know, doing, well, you said it, Patrice, you know, because they've got all the money, you know, that, okay, it's a big deal when they put money out.
Mm. Yeah.
Am I alone on that?
No, I think I agree. Like, I mean, they have done bigger investments, like was it like $1 billion or $1.5 billion for the housing crisis in California? Or like I don't know what to call it, housing crisis. I have more feeling this is a starting point, and if Apple sees the need, then they will invest more. I think you're right. They don't want to be too flashy, because otherwise the big headline will be Apple invests all the money. And for them, it's not about that, and that's very clear in the video that Tim Cook posted. It's more about also initiatives in the background. It's not just throwing the money at the problem and then saying, oh, someone else figure it out. They're increasing or trying to increase spending with like black-owned partners in the supply chain and so on. They're trying to launch developer programs and other things like that. So they're trying also very hard to do stuff that they can do, and that's not always, like, it's not always about money. It's about like actually going in and doing something.
Yeah, sometimes it's resources, you know, and, you know, if they're able to, you know, give to the cause and help people with the resources, doing things like picking a lot of the shows that they've been picking, the TV, as we spoke about last week, you know, those are very, very awesome. I think even producing a movie like The Banker was very incredible. The initial... what was the word? They had a name for the initial actors when they first started TV, like the sort of like in-house clique. But you had your Oprah, you had your Octavia Spencer, your Will I Am. Like they have been doing this for a minute. It's not brand new. And so it's kind of unfair to pick on them. And Chuck, you're absolutely right. If it was too much, it would look fake. So I'd rather them start at 100 million. And like Patrice said, go, man, this is working. All right, let's double down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different story. I think that's acceptable. And again, like if they only gave a million, I would be mad, but it's still something, right? You can't laugh at $1 million.
That's true. You know what I'm saying?
If they wanted to just, if they say, you know, Doc, we were going to give you 100 million, but we're just going to give you a million. Mm. I'd be like, shucks. Where's the beer store?
Yeah. You know? So. I mean, let's not forget, and we've seen it, and I don't want to I don't want to get too political here, but we've seen that in a lot of cities the social programs get less than what Apple just invested.
Yes.
A lot of big cities. Yeah, so absolutely. We just saw that. So yeah, that's, I mean, 100 million you can do a lot with.
Yeah.
I think Apple's looking at this whole thing in a more holistic way. And Doc, you hit on part of that, like the different types of shows that Apple has been bringing on. We've seen this with the way they've approached LGBTQ rights, and so donating this money now, it fits in with that. And Chuck, your observation on the optics, I think, is appropriate as well, because Apple isn't the kind of company that's looking at this and saying, can we just bury the problem in money and make it go away?
Mm-hmm.
They're actually doing things that go beyond just throwing cash at something.
Yeah.
Jeff, go.
Oh, yeah. Anyhow, I hope that the pattern we've been seeing is something that continues. And I'm assuming it will, because we're looking at years of proactive and reactive work on Apple's part. So the 100 million now, that's not the end of it. Mm-hmm. This is just the next thing they're doing in whatever the long term is for trying to support rights and equality across the board. And also, I think that Apple is probably looking at this as something that's allowed them to reevaluate how they're actually handling things internally. So it wouldn't surprise me to see improvements in their overall diversity in the company as well.
I was just going to kind of echo that sort of point, almost, that I think with anything Apple do historically, they will definitely see it through. And I think Doc touched on it as well when he said, if it's working, they will. I don't know if they double down. I don't know a figure or a number or whatever, but you know, it is something that if it's working, they will follow it through, which will be a good thing. And I think, and I agree with Chuck's point as well. You do have to be careful with the number and the figure, but I don't think that's too important, because they have been doing things and they will continue to be doing things to kind of bridge that gap and help people. So.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things that they're doing, to nobody's surprise, Apple announced the WWDC keynote, the timeline, like everything that's happening. As you guys know, it's happening online, all online this year. There's unfortunately, I should say, because I really enjoyed it the last 2 years, there's nothing happening anywhere in California. As I said, but like Apple announced this couple of months ago, I think in, I want to say March or April, late March, I think. And yesterday they announced the schedule. And as we already knew, kind of, the keynote is on the 22nd of June, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, as usual, like same time as always. It's just delay. It was just pushed back a couple of weeks. What is interesting and what I think might surprise people is they're gonna basically, I mean, there was this big question, how are they gonna do the sessions? Will that just be live shows? Will that be pre-recorded? And it's the latter. They pre-recorded all sessions, and they're gonna drop a couple every day at 10 a.m. Pacific. So every morning or evening, depending on where you are, you're going to get a bunch of videos for the day to watch, and you can watch the sessions just like always. They're also doing labs on appointment, so I'm going to guess that will be very, very interesting to see. how many people use those, especially since more people than usual will have access to it. And they're gonna relaunch the Apple, the developer forum, the week before, I think, on the 18th. So there will be a brand new developer forum staffed with actual engineers. And you will be able to discuss things there and ask questions and so on. So kind of also a little bit of a departure of the old from the old forum, because that was kind of dead. I mean, people were asking questions, but it was very rare that anybody from Apple ever commented or did anything in there. So here's hoping that that will change. So yeah, it's a week away, or a little bit more than a week, like 10 days. Which is kind of crazy to me, at least.
So I guess I know what I'll be doing at 11 a.m. on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
On the 21st? Safe bet at all.
22nd, whatever it is.
Yeah.
22nd.
Yeah, well, it's I just got caught up on the fact that it's Octoberary.
Yeah, exactly.
It's it is at 10 a.m., Jeff.
Yeah.
Tell the S lady to set an alarm for you so you don't miss it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's already set it. For me, it's 11 a.m. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Because that's right. Because you're mounted. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that I said 11 a.m. is now going to screw up all kinds of people, and they're going to miss the keynote.
Yeah.
So I apologize in advance.
Yeah. So,
well, if they watch it we don't have to actually cover it, do we? Because it won't be live. Oh, it will be live. The keynote will be live. Everything else will be recorded.
Yeah. So the keynote and the State of the Union, the keynote and the State of the Union will be live. Those will be live shows from Apple Park. So I'm guessing there will be like a couple of people on stage and maybe like a couple of people in the audience. I'm pretty sure they will have some people that are in like working in the mothership will probably just wander over and then sit like, 6 feet apart or something.
Good. Then we'll be here, so we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be here bothering Jeff, making sure he's on time.
Exactly.
Sweet. I appreciate that.
Yeah, as I said, it's 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. That should be 6 p.m.
11 a.m. Mountain.
11 a.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. UK time, 7 p.m. Central European time, and I don't know.
It's always like 7 a.m. to me.
Yep, exactly. It's always the same time for you. So is there anything you're excited about or you're waiting for?
Yes. New iMac.
New iMac.
I don't need the smaller one. I hope they also speed and power bump the Big Daddy, because my cycle is September.
Mm-hmm.
I always get my new iMac and it's due. Anything wrong, Louise. Relax. Yeah, she's fine. I have this beast loaded 27 inch over here, but one of the probably the best things a business person can do with their Macs is put them in the lease cycle. And a lot of people don't do it because we've just been told our whole lives that you want to own this type of stuff, right? Mm. Now, of course, your accountant, I can't give you accountant advice, but for me, one of the reasons why I like leasing it, and you know, I converted even the missus to leasing hers, is because my notebook that I have sitting over there, I got it in 2012, and for all intents and purposes, it's flawless. But after about the third year, it's not really, you know, as quick as it should be. Mm-hmm. After like the fifth year, it's definitely not as quick as it should be, and is normally deprecated by Apple. But because they keep working, and they work so well, and you fall in love with them, you give them names, Louise, Arya, Vader, Sidious. Sidious is the oldest one. Some of you guys caught that. It's a 2013 iMac. You fall in love with your computer and then you become best friends with it. And that's great if you're a personal user, but as a business person, you're probably operating slower than the people that you're competing with. Hmm. So like making yourself change them out through Apple lease every 2 to 3 years, which is your two options. I use two because I do video editing and, you know, publishing and stuff. So it's awesome. Your computer always is the latest and the greatest and the fastest. So that's why I'm waiting for this new iMac. and that I hope the bezel-less one comes out, because this little mm-hmm. giant piece of silver at the bottom of this one does nothing but hold my stickers and my patches.
And the Apple, and that, the Apple logo.
Yeah, I covered it with a patch.
Oh.
So, yeah, it does nothing. Like, I would love it to just be bezel-less. It would just mm-hmm. be just awesome. Mm-hmm. And you can make it a little thicker to get rid of the bezel. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had to get away from this little, this guy is about 7 cards. If you were to stack deck of cards, take maybe 8. If you had to take that back to a full deck of cards to give me bezel, I'll take it.
Yeah. Why? Like,
no bezel, sorry.
The question is, why would they release an iMac like that this year, stepped up DC?
Because maybe something's going to happen hardware related in there that requires developers to develop.
So you mean mm-hmm. ARM, maybe?
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That would be great. Like, yeah. An iMac with ARM so it can hold your phone.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of, though, honestly, mm-hmm. is if they're adding something to the hardware that definitely requires the developers to develop, then it mm-hmm. will come through. Because if I remember correctly, when we got the Touch Bar notebooks, they came in WWDC because people had the right for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise, it would, because that was the, I think that was the last time that notebooks came out during the dubs.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not 100% sure about that. Definitely the Retina, when they introduced Retina, that was one that
yeah, came out. Because you had to redo layouts, right?
Exactly. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. assets especially, yeah. I'm not sure about the Touch Bar. I think Touch Bar was maybe later somewhat.
That's the only reason why. Something that, you know, requires the developers to do their thing, mm-hmm. then you have to do it at WWDC yep. so you have time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they want to show, I mean, what they did kind of last year, they want to show something off to the pros. I mean, last year with the Mac Pro, for example, where, I mean, it didn't ship for another, I don't know, almost 6 months. But, yeah, not quite. Yeah, like 5 months. But they wanted to show it off to professionals and wanted to show, like, what you can do with it. So that was their time for it, basically. Could also be that they have like a really sleek new design and something really awesome that they want to show off and say, hey, pros, look at this.
That would be it too. Yeah. And that bezel-less thing looks pretty. I hate rumors because then I won't be mad, but that is the first one that's caught my eye in forever. And I was like, ooh, no bezel. This mm-hmm. is cool. Especially because I have twins on the desk, right? Mm-hmm. So it'd be just really, really nice to have him set up like that. But yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's pray for the bezel-less iMac.
The bezel-less iMac, I mean, that's a design that I was surprised they didn't release when the iMac Pro was announced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Because, we've already got that design in the iPad.
Yeah.
And it works really well.
And the monitor.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the monitor too. Yes, Callum, for you, it sounds like an absolute nightmare. But but for someone like me who doesn't actually ever have to pull the machines apart, mm. it sounds really damn sexy.
I just dismantled the 2013. What'd you say, Callum?
In terms of using it, wonderful, but taking one to pieces. Was it a thick one or a thin one, Doc?
You can't really tell, but I'm assuming if it's gonna go bezel-less, it has to be thicker than what it is right now. Mm-hmm. I just pulled apart a 2013 like a couple of days ago to get the hard drive out, and yeah, it's not as easy as the original suction cup days where you just just pop it right off.
Yeah. You want one of those iFixit wheels? They're very good for that.
Mm. Yeah,
that's what I use every day.
I'm definitely looking forward to the whole ARM Mac transition. I was actually thinking about that my next Mac might actually be an ARM Mac, because why not? Like, I mean, might as well jump in, do it right away. I'm very excited about it. I don't know. I mean, it's probably going to be difficult. It's going to, like, there are going to be issues. Software is probably not going to work or not work as well. I mean, that's kind of what I'm expecting. But I'm still excited because I think it's a step forward, and it's hopefully better performance and better like battery life at the same time. And that's definitely something that I'm I'm missing.
Well, I think Apple's been doing a lot of real-world testing on their ARM hardware. And I think that the iPad Pro is in many ways like the iPod Nano. And I always thought the iPod Nano as a test platform for features. Mm-hmm. And what worked there eventually found its way out to other iPods. And I think Apple is using the iPad Pro in the same way to a degree. And so we've seen feature changes and enhancements. We have the new Magic Keyboard. And all of these things that Apple's been doing gives them a way to test things and features and code elements that will be part of macOS in an ARM-based Mac. And they can collect all this data because we're using these devices in the real world right now. So yeah, we're seeing weird things with some apps on the iPad when you're using a mouse as a pointing device, but that's okay to a degree because that gives Apple a lot of data on how this needs to work. It doesn't mean we're going to have a transparent and smooth transition to ARM-based Macs. And I think there's going to be plenty of wailing and gnashing of teeth, but it's not going to be as bad as it could have been because Apple has a lot of data that they're already collecting.
Yeah.
Because we're beta testers using iPad Pros right now.
Probably yes, and I mean at the same time they've probably had a like a desktop class ARM CPU since 2012 apparently, like that's when we heard the first rumors about it. So they've had 8 years to do it, and if it's really this much better, I mean, given that the CPU in an iPad is in a lot of ways way better than even the CPUs on a desktop, at least for some things, in the desktops Apple is selling, or even anybody else is selling to some extent. If you scale that up, and if Apple managed to scale that up, like have more power with maybe even, yeah, I mean more power with more cooling and everything, we could be in the same situation that we were when they transitioned from PowerPC to Intel, where the Intel chips were just so much better that any downside that you had if you had to run PowerPC apps on Intel were just eaten up by that it was simply way more powerful and could just do that in a snap. And
one thing that was sort of skipped over there for a second, and Callum, I guess you're the guy to answer it. I've never taken apart a thin iMac. So if they, and I'm sitting in front of a thin iMac, so if they reduce the bezel, that either means the screen is going to get bigger or it's just going to, you know, hack that off. So wouldn't that, does that mean that there's a circuit board redesign necessary?
Probably not a circuit board redesign. I'd say the chassis would change quite a bit because obviously you've got, so basically the way an iMac's built at the moment, the power supply actually sits behind that silver bit. So obviously it's not, and then has insulation because obviously it's made out of aluminium. So it stops it touching the screen and blowing anything up, frankly. Just thinking in my head how they'd do it internally, they'd have to make the screen, I'd say, slightly thicker and probably have to have the LCD and then maybe some sort of glass or metal, I don't know, to sit on the back of the chassis to have it completely almost bezel-less, because the way it works at the moment is the weight of the screen sits on a lip that's on that silver bezel and then it's just sealed around the edge. So it will be interesting to see if they are going to go down that route, how they pull that off, because granted I don't work for Apple in their design part, but I couldn't see how they could effectively do it and make it better than the current design personally. Yeah. But,
and I mean if you look at the chassis of a, or even the logic board of a current iMac, especially on this 27 inch, there's like, it's not that much. I mean, there's a little, like there's like a little logic board in the middle of the screen, basically. Most of the rest is just empty space. Or yes. Like heat sinks and so on.
It isn't a very dense board at all. Yeah. What I find with iMacs, especially compared to MacBooks, you tend to have the main logic board and then lots of other little kind of daughter boards, I suppose mm-hmm. they're called. Yeah. So I know the camera has one, I know the SD card has one where it's basically a little tiny board mm-hmm. attached to where the SD card is. So
They could just keep that as is, basically. Space is still like there's still lots of space, even if they make it better less.
There is a lot of space in an iMac. A lot of space just there. But it would be interesting to see how they stick the screen to the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would be what would interest me. And also a worry that I would have if you are going to service it and you are going to have to take that screen off. I wonder how easy or difficult it would be to crack, because obviously you're going to have to put something behind the screen to pry it off.
Mm.
I can just envisage you cracking it every time if you're trying to get into them.
I can just see like 15 tons of glue somewhere in there.
Oh, there's 15 tons of glue in every Apple product.
I guess where I was going though, and you guys have answered it, that there's a lot of empty space in there, because I'm trying to visualize if they're using all that space for your storage device and your power supply and all, and then you just say, okay, I want to cut off, what is that, about 4 inches, 5 inches off the bottom? Well, then that stuff has to go somewhere. Mm. But if there's that much space, then it just means maybe a rearrangement of things and maybe, again, a little thicker, but not necessarily massively thicker.
Yeah, what I've heard is that at least the smaller iMac, the form factor is going to stay the same. The screen size is just going to increase a little bit.
As far as I'm aware, they did that with the 16-inch MacBook. They just took it from the bezel, and it was pretty much the same form factor as a 15-inch.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe it was slightly heavier as well, which is not like Apple at all.
Not much.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
The 16 is awesome, by the way. I just want to put that out there. It's lightning fast, and the keyboard is so comfy.
Finally.
Yeah, the 16-inch is really nice.
So coming back to WWDC, is there anything software-wise that you're really hoping for, or are you like happy with the way things are and just make it more smooth or something?
Yes. There are things that I want to see. First off, I want something that what I want them to do is basically completely overhaul Catalina, because generally speaking, Catalina is a pretty rough operating system.
Yep.
Then there's a couple other things that I have wanted for years, and I would love to see that happen now. And the first one is, never let another window take focus.
Mm-hmm.
If I have set a window as my focus, then there shouldn't be something else that suddenly takes that over. So, for example, you launch an application, and then you switch to the application you want to use right now while the other one is launching. At some point, the other one is going to take focus.
Yep.
That should never, ever happen.
That has happened to me.
if Apple fixes that, because I see that as a problem that needs to be fixed, that in and of itself will be enough to justify upgrading to the new operating system.
Mm.
I've never thought about it, but that drives me mad.
Yep, it does.
Isn't it just awful?
I've never thought of it as a problem, or more just something that happens and that's it. But
you know when it's a problem?
It drives you mad.
When you're starting up, right, and some apps take longer to start up. It's so funny when you do that. Clear cup. When you're starting up, and I sometimes just fire up the computer because I just need to grab something out of Google real quick. Okay, so it's open. I'm typing into Google, and then the menu bar dudes are doing what they need to do. And I've already checked it. It's just hide. I know you're there. Stay there. You do your job when I need you, but I don't need you every 5 seconds. So when I'm typing into Google, stop defocusing to another app.
Yeah.
And then taken away from I was typing, and I got like three letters, and then back I got to go back, and I got two more letters in real quick, and another one, and it's irritating. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And because the browser, you know, if you're using Safari, the browser is so quick, when you boot it up, like it's ready to go, and yep. everything else is still loading. But I don't need to stay on Safari, dude. I just need to go to Google to find out what time Jay Dolan's, or the best pizza in town, if they're open for takeout, or just place my order. Mm-hmm. I want the jalapeno poppers when I want my jalapeno poppers with the good mustard sauce. So sorry, I'm hungry.
See, yeah, you get it,
Doc. Isn't it breakfast time where you are?
Yeah, pizza and jalapeno poppers for breakfast. You don't keep this shape by being a wussy.
Okay. Glad I brought it up.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, that's something that annoys me as well. Like, I have some apps that just take forever to load, and then like the others are like Safari especially, it's ready, you start doing something, and then all of a sudden it steals your focus. And like, I have some really odd apps, like IntelliJ for example, where like I have four IntelliJ windows, all of them are full screen, they restart full screen, and the screen just keeps bouncing back and forth between those three windows.
I've just had a thought as well.
It's like, yeah, go ahead.
When I'm diagnosing a customer's machine, I'll boot into their OS, I'll plug a memory stick in, and it's got some diagnostic tools on. Mm-hmm. And I'm there, and my diagnostic tools are quite light, so a bit like Safari, they tend to boot up very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I'm there analyzing a hard drive or something like that, having to read through, and then you just get like God knows what pop up, and you know, admit Google Chrome with 82,000 tabs and things like that, and it's just terrible.
Yeah,
I've never thought of it like that, but it's, I hate using Macs now. This is terrible.
That's not that bad. Yeah.
Okay, Callum, I'll make it worse for you. You know the pop-up that says there are apps that need to be updated?
Yeah.
Frickin' tell me which apps need to be updated.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no.
Or at least make it a setting. I mean, Jeff, I'm with you. You know, I think we're back to that discussion of, does the everyman want to know which apps are want to be updated, or do they just need to be updated? And if you could just toggle an option that lets those of us that care, you know, that would definitely be a nice thing. I'm sitting here looking at one right now. Updates available. Do you want to start to install these updates now or try tonight? How about neither? You know.
Yes. I think you and said that a couple of times that we need the F off button.
Yeah. The funny one to me is notifications. There's certain notifications, like it happened so quick. I saw it, but I was concentrating. Mm-hmm. Notification came up. I looked over. It was a long one. I got about two lines in and it disappears. I was okay. I just opened Notification Center and reread it. It ain't there.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that?
Good Did job. You,
son of a...
Yeah.
Things I can't say on this show. Mm-hmm. I'll let you say it. But yeah, it's like, where did you go? Like, that was an important one. And so now I got to go try to guess what I thought it was and then open a bunch of apps and try to figure it out. And it's like,
yeah,
at least with the phone you can pull back old notifications. Like, if you're gonna make it continuity, then be continuity. Yeah. You know, it's like when the shot, you know, the cup's like this on the table, and then they cut away to the second shot, and they come back, and then the cup's like this on the table, and it's like, you got somebody paid to watch that crap. Like, come on. Yeah, exactly. That drives me crazy. Whenever I see broken continuity in shows, I lose it, because somebody's job. And all they need is an iPhone and a piece of paper and to keep everything in track. Take a picture. Okay, let's go. Make sure it's back exactly how it was. Yeah. You know?
No, it's so true. Yeah, there's another thing that annoys me on a daily basis. There's like a million like forum posts and everything about it. There's the Windows Server task. Just uses up like 120, 130% CPU. For nothing, there's nothing running even. Like, it's not even that there was anything running that it would say, well, okay, that makes sense. No, it's just using up cycles. And sometimes it doesn't. Like, sometimes it goes down to 5%, 10%. So it's really, really random.
I got one for you. Since you said that, since you brought it up, and then I know Calvin can agree with this because this comes up from customers all the time. What the heck is kernel task and why is it doing so and so? I'm like, well, kernel task can be myriad things. Let's see if we can nail down what it is. And sometimes it's, you know, if there's one that says iCloud sync server to let you know that your iCloud syncing is doing something, but sometimes it also just comes up as kernel task. And so you don't know what it is. You have to dig, and the digging is not very easy. And there's nothing in the kernel that you can't give a name. Nothing. Not one. So don't give me generic kernel task. And explain to people that 800% CPU is a possibility when you have multiple cores. Like, at least put a little reminder, like a hover over and thing pops up. Yes, it says 800 CPU because you have 8 cores. And so we're getting 100% all those cores. Yeah. It'll take 5 minutes for that thing to go away because you're using 800% CPU. But still, that stuff confuses the people who probably shouldn't have been an activity monitor anyway, but
no, it's true. I mean,
but it becomes a question that I have to answer on the phone.
Yeah, I mean, kernel task, oftentimes if it's really like acting up, half of the time it's actually thermal management. Like it's just introducing empty cycles where it's doing nothing just to like manage the temperature. I just checked. I have like 140% CPU right now on Windows Server, and I have like 4 or 5 windows open. So, yeah, that's like a long run. Nobody has figured out what it is. It goes away sometimes for no reason. Like I have like if I switch even profiles to another user, sometimes changes completely. Like it's stuff like that. Just that. I mean, especially as someone who's developing and like needs every CPU cycle I can get to get through stuff faster, and then basically one CPU core or sometimes more, like 1.5, is completely gone for nothing. I mean, I'm sure. Like I have a couple of browser windows and like an IDE with text. So there's nothing going on with video or anything where I would say this would require this much CPU. Yeah, that makes no sense.
I mean, listening to everybody here, including me, it sounds like what we really need is we need just almost no new features. Yeah. And you know, one of those releases where, okay, we're just going to focus on locking it down and polishing it up and making sure that it's as good as it can be. And I have to wonder if we're going to get that if we are moving to, when we move to ARM. You know, how much effort are they going to put into the existing architecture as opposed to the ARM architecture? And frankly, which one makes sense? What makes more sense?
I think especially when you're doing a transition like that, I think they're gonna invest more in it. Like less, I mean, I wouldn't count ARM transition as a feature. I think it's more that's more changes under the hood, like improvements, making things more efficient, making it run on multiple platforms. So also probably touching code that nobody wanted to touch before because it was too risky or too difficult or just didn't have time for it. Now you have to because you have to touch everything. So I could definitely see that happening where they're like, okay, we have maybe a couple of new features. I mean, I'm not going to say there are no features missing. There are some things that they could be doing. But maybe it's also a good time, as I said, to fix things and say, okay, we're transitioning anyway. We have to touch everything anyway. So let's clean it up.
Yeah, if they can do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because, listen, there's a huge install base out there that is not going to be happy with it just completely freezing for a while, or freezing until those machines slide off into the obsolete category. Mm-hmm.
No, that's not going to be acceptable, especially not on the enterprise side. Like that's, I mean, just remember, there are like big companies like IBM that have hundreds of thousands of Macs now. That wouldn't be acceptable at all for them. Like if everything just stopped working.
Dude, Patrice, you brought it up, and then now my fans just decided to jump all the way up. Yeah, I was sitting at 127 degrees, and now I'm at 145, and I didn't do anything but listen to you guys. So that's pretty funny.
Exactly.
Are you, Docker,
Are you, Doc, are you implying that there's a lot of hot air here? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's implying Patrice is hot.
Oh, okay.
No, it comes from the mountains in Colorado. Let's put it that way.
Yes, that explains so much. But Doc, at least it's a dry heat.
Hilarious.
Anything else you guys want to mention that you like want to see on maybe on iOS, for example, or on iPadOS especially?
Wow. Man, I'm loving iPadOS at the moment. It's so awesome.
I'd like to see an improvement with the files system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
That needs some more work because right now it's fine, but you know, if you want to put a file somewhere, working with subfolders is pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So addressing things like that would be nice.
Yeah.
Good one.
Every time I export a podcast, I have to navigate through like 8 layers, and it's every time the same thing. And then I open it up again, I have to do the same thing once over. Like, doesn't, like, Mac, for example, remembers what you've opened last. Like, doesn't work in files.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, it's true. Also, it sometimes crashes. It's the other. It's not very stable.
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
It's not very stable. Yeah. No, I'm with Doc on here, like, for everything else. Multitasking could be better on the iPad. I think there's still room for improvement. Like especially I run into that issue where like I accidentally open one of my Safari tabs in a new window. I don't know how, it just happens. And there's no way to close it. You have like a side by side window or something or a slide over. And then the only way to close it is basically to get it off screen, like into a full screen mode, and then you can close it in the multitasking view. And that's
I'm running into that.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying because like it's so much easier on a Mac in this case. Like there's a red X on the window, and you just tap it and it's gone.
And then it's gone.
Exactly, and I think that's something. The concept like that doesn't have to be exactly the same thing, but a concept like that is I think missing on the iPad. Like especially since we're now using multiple windows and slide overs and all of that.
Yeah, I'd even be happy with a tap and hold where you get a close option.
Yeah, for example, would be easy. There's even a very convenient place. It's where the place where you like can slide that thing around. Just sure. You tap and hold there. Yeah, it doesn't work. So that's, as I said, that's something I don't understand. I honestly don't understand why that is even a problem because it. There was a concept already available. Like, it's not that they had to reinvent that completely or, like, come up with a new, like, come up with copy and paste or something where it's, like, never existed and they had to figure it out. No, like, I mean, the concept was there. And, like, I mean, yeah, you can check it and maybe think about, like, a better way. But if you can't figure out a better way, then at least you have a way how to do it. But not doing it is kind of not an option.
And yet here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely one thing that I would like to see improved. Okay. I mean, we have another show next week where we can talk more about what's coming up. That will be the show before the show before the show.
The Dubs.
The show before the Dubs. Apple is also has already announced that they're discontinuing something. iBooks Author, which I don't know. Is anybody using? That's still
no.
I was under the impression most people that were using iBooks Author had probably already transitioned over to Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I mean, Apple made it pretty clear this was coming, even though they didn't blatantly say we're going to kill iBooks Author. But when they moved a lot of the iBooks Author features into Pages and then told people you should be using this now.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a pretty good indication.
and didn't do anything with it. Like, I mean, they moved all the features over and basically abandoned it. So it wasn't like surprising.
This is one of the frustrating traits of Apple,
mm-hmm.
where they build something, it has a lot of potential, and then they just abandon it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's something else that is, I think, more of a big deal, at least for me, and that is also will be discontinued next year, and that's iTunes U. Has been around for I don't know how long. I mean...
Yeah, I remember when they announced it, and it was a really great concept,
mm-hmm.
and there were a lot of schools, universities, whatever, that signed on,
mm-hmm.
and the content that was available publicly was mm-hmm. great, and it sure addressed a lot of issues for distance learning. You'd think it would be really popular right now with schools
it is.
Having to be closed for on-campus stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, if you look at it and you open it up, I mean, there are a lot of schools using it, like, to this day, like Stanford, especially Harvard. I think I've seen, like, the big Ivy League schools have a lot of content in there. Like, you can find a lot of good content in there. So,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of schools have built their curriculum around it. Like, they're publishing everything through iTunes U.
They were early. That's what it is. I mean, primarily they were early. They were, it's no one's fault when you're early. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes when you're an innovator, you're just too good. Right. Mm-hmm. And although it's not a heavily innovative thing, the concept of doing it was really, really early. If it had to come out like pretty much like right now, it'd be the talk of the town, mm-hmm. because, you know, you could do all of this stuff, you know, virtually. And again, we've been doing this for a while. The other thing that happened is in the course of iTunes U coming out, and this is just one of my pet peeves. So it's not even an Apple thing. This is just a cultural thing. We've become culturally back to, being the brainiac is no longer cool again, mm-hmm. right? Because now tech is so pervasive, right? At one point, nerds, we walked around with a little pep in our step because everybody was onboarding smartphones, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say 2007, mm-hmm. 2010, pretty much all of us rocked out with the cock out because everybody needed us because nobody knew how to do anything, right? And the same thing when the web first, the web 2.0 bubble and the one prior, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 2000-ish would have been one of those, you know, years where, you know, everybody was freaking out on Y2K. Everybody was rushing to be on the net. You know, I need to get my website up for my business, whatever. Like, nerds, we just walked around like, sashay, you need me? Call me. I would be over here enjoying a martini. And then now, because this stuff is so pervasive, mm-hmm. people think that they got it, and Apple and everybody else has made it so easy that everybody thinks they got it by themselves. And so what happens in that time frame, the amount of people that are just diving into education kind of went away, right? Mm-hmm. And then everybody got into arguing about political stuff, and political stuff was talking about colleges getting too greedy, colleges that were giving IT programs were getting too greedy. And then so culturally, as a country, like, we started slowing down on the smartness, and that buries iTunes U,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Lynda almost went out of business, but then LinkedIn bought them up, and now that everybody's mm-hmm. losing jobs, you want to see some energy on the internet, people? Go hang out in LinkedIn for a little bit
mm-hmm.
over the last couple of months. LinkedIn is on fire. Everybody's in there trying to get back to work,
yeah.
because we got put in a position now where a bunch of talented folks is fired. And when a whole bunch of talented folks get fired at one time, LinkedIn lights up like a Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what it is. We just got culturally lulled on laziness and the Kardashians and, you know, just mindless TV and stuff like that. And iTunes U and things of that nature took a hit. Mm-hmm. And now they're coming back. Skillshare is making a mint right now. Lynda.com, mm-hmm. AKA LinkedIn Learning, is making a mint right now. Coursera, Code Academy, Khan Academy, all of these guys are banging right now. Let's hope it keeps going. I love the resmartening of our country.
Mm, I hope so too.
Cool. I think Doc just coined a phrase.
Re-smartening?
The re-smartening. I like that. I don't know enough about this, and so it's not an area I worked in, but from the little bit I read about it, it sounded like a lot of content had already, and some of the administrative capabilities had moved over to some more recent software.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Classroom and schoolwork.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Patrice, because mm-hmm. I knew they were school-oriented something. So, you know, I guess my question becomes, is this just something that, you know, has been supplanted by something that is better, that is more modern and more in keeping with the needs? And I am way out of my league here because I'm not an educator and I don't know what those offer versus iTunes U.
Yeah.
I just set up an iPad yesterday using the school, what is it called? The MDM.
Yeah.
MDM. And it was pretty cool. They have they have Apple ID for school. Isn't that crazy? So yeah.
You can have that Emma for your business iPad, too.
Yeah. I found that out in reading about it because it was new to me. Emma's going to private school this year, and she got her iPad yesterday because they do mm-hmm. everything on the iPad for sixth grade now. And when you log everything in, it's like, don't use your regular Apple ID. Log in with your Apple ID for the school, and the mm-hmm. thing pops up. This is Apple ID for school, and it automatically loaded everything. It was mm-hmm. beautiful. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is way easier than I thought. I think it's going to be like a 2-hour process. It took like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's pretty good. Like those managed Apple IDs that you can have, and like the whole system. I've seen it, and it's pretty impressive. I think the problem with that is, I mean, iTunes U was kind of a mix between, I want to say, podcasts and iTunes content and YouTube and like a bunch of things together. Like there were some, as far as I remember, there were some class management things in there, but it was very bare bones. And Apple has said, like, the content, most of the content in iTunes U can easily be transitioned into podcasts or into books even. So the content, I don't think it's going to get lost, but it's still like the difference is there is no dedicated place that you can go to. Like for mm-hmm. us, like we could go to, I mean, I remember when I started learning iPhone development back in, I don't know, 2009, I want to say, 9 or 10, something like that. I went into iTunes U and I looked at the Stanford class, and that's how I learned. I just followed along. There is no way to do that anymore. Like, I mean, yeah, I could try to find it on podcasts, I could try to find something in books, but more likely I'm just gonna go to YouTube then, because if iTunes U isn't around, then I'll just go to YouTube or one of the other solutions, like the stuff Doc mentioned, and just gonna find it there. And I think that's a little bit of a pity that like there's no place where you can get all that together.
Okay. You know what's funny? I'm surprised they've never done it yet, because I've always called it University at YouTube, because mm-hmm. you can go there and learn anything. Mm-hmm. I can't believe the people at the Alphabet Soup have never came up with University at YouTube.
No, there's a YouTube University.
What?
Yeah, there's a YouTube University.
What does it do?
It's for creators. You can learn how to create stuff and so
on. Oh, no, I got that. No, yeah. I know that. It's called Creator University. Yeah. I went through that. It's a self-certification thing. I meant where they aggregate like learned mm-hmm. and scholarly stuff, so you don't have to hunt for it, right? Yeah. Like it would just be a thing. Just like they have YouTube for kids or mm-hmm. YouTube Music, mm-hmm. there'd be an app that was basically scholarly stuff. So mm-hmm. if you were going to go into old school logic classes, or mm-hmm. you wanted to go and learn like the Richard Feynman technique and stuff like that, rather than having mm-hmm. to comb through a bunch of apps, like these were the ones that were created by Dr. Vinny Boombots at Harvard University, and you go down his list and you know you just kind of watch the whole thing. I always thought that would be just an incredible way to do mm-hmm. this type of stuff, and it makes it easier. For instance, like, you know, say Callum is like, hey, you know, I'm finding myself needing to do a lot more design work. And then so you got to go and find these, you know, guys who are great designers, and you build your playlist around it. It'd be cool if you were able to just pluck up, you know, a design school out of, say, University of SF and just watch their playlist. And then you got it, you know, you got your basics.
That's brilliant.
That's a great idea. Let's sell it to Google.
But Patrice, though, you know, I guess I look at it from a different angle. I'm thinking, okay, back when this was, when iTunes U was launched, there weren't as many of these options out there. And now that kind of training clearly has value. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me to be able to go and take a Stanford class for free, you know, what's wrong with this picture? Especially now that, and within the last couple months, of course, that virtual learning may be a whole lot more mainstream mm-hmm. than it ever has been before. So do you really want to be giving away that stuff, whether you're Stanford or just Jeff Gamet, you know, mm-hmm. doing training on his multimeter? You know, that stuff now has value. Mm-hmm. A lot of, and people on this podcast, you know, a lot of us give stuff away for free on YouTube or through our podcasts. But, you know, if you're in a commercial situation, yeah, you want to support learning without expense up to a point, but then, you know, at some point you got to make money or you're going to go out of business.
Yeah, that's true.
I always seem to be the business guy. I want to charge for everything. Sorry.
No, it's, I mean, ultimately you're right. Like, you can give away some stuff, but at some point, like, you have to make money, like, especially if it's costing you money, like, at some point you have to decide.
I've always thought about it differently. I've always been very, very comfortable to explain in depth what I do and, you know, this is how you do it. And it's, granted, I'm in quite a niche, but it's always worked out for me because most people go, well, I'd have to buy this much equipment and also it's quite hard anyway, so I'll take it to IMA Max and they can do it. Mm. So I've never had an issue doing that, and I do kind of wonder, just going back to Chuck's point, would it be the same with sort of learning? Would it be more, yes, I can learn on YouTube, but would people go, no, actually, I want to, you know, have a tutor and get a certificate or whatever at the end of it? I don't know. But,
I like getting, even to this day, I still like getting the piece of paper that says, or
you did it, you
know, even if it's virtual, that says I did it. I don't know why that is, but I still prefer that. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just some deep psychological stuff, you know, that's been built into us humans for our reward. You know, we're getting into some like Maslow mixed with Freud there. But I agree. And, you know, I can tell you right now, though, if you're a creator at all, if you do YouTube videos at all, your numbers have spiked because everybody's home watching this mess, you know? Yeah. And then, so I'm lucky that I was already in right place, right time. But the funny thing is, majority of my videos over the last 2 months have been teaching all of the random people that decided they had to jump on YouTube or jump onto Zoom or jump onto some other form of live streaming. So I spend a lot of my week now teaching yoga practitioners and fitness gurus, or, you know, piano teachers, like how to set up their live streams so that they can talk to their students because they can't come physically mm-hmm. in the building. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we've been doing this for a minute, folks. I remember coaching every single one of you guys that started a YouTube channel, and you thought it was only for 13-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So now there you go. So it's one of those things that has been there for a minute. And, you know, even a company like yourself, Callum, if you guys are just saying, like, you know, here, this is us repairing a machine, so you can see that the value is in what we do. Look how tiny these stuff is. Look at these little ribbon cables that you have to open with this spudger and get it perfectly to pull the cable out. Because if you just yank this cable out, you just busted an $800 logic board. So, yeah, maybe you ought to bring it to us, you know. So without doing a commercial, you're doing a commercial by literally showing them that what you do is not as easy as a lot of people think. It's like, oh, and the iFix reparability scores would kind of be your number one selling tool. This has a reparability of F no.
Speaking of commercials. But yet
I can do it.
Yeah. Speaking of commercials.
Or Callum, if you're like me, when it comes to like home repair, I see it on YouTube. I think, yeah, I can do that. And then I end up having to hire somebody anyway to fix it because I broke it.
Yeah.
Because I either didn't follow the instructions or my model didn't look like what they were working on and I screwed it up. And so at some point, you just come up and say, fine.
I'll be really honest. They're my favorite jobs when they come in. They really are. Because someone's had a go at it with the best of intentions, and really, you know, and they come in and it's, I'm sorry. That's normally the first thing is, I'm really sorry, but I've done this. Okay.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. And it's just, okay, we'll get you sorted out. And I always appreciate when people are more honest as well. It does my head in when they put it all back together. Oh, yeah, it just broke. And you open it up. And I remember I had one years ago. Like, I opened the iMac up and, like, the front of the CD drive had been unscrewed because I wanted to get a CD out, and like it just fell out. And, like, there was just, it was just, okay, you might have mentioned that you'd opened it to get your favorite, you know, DVD out the slot, but okay. Yeah.
Speaking of commercial, this podcast and all the podcasts on the network are supported by TSO Host. They're a really good hosting company, whether you're looking for domain names, you want to host a website, they have pre-built packages for WordPress, they have like really, really cool servers. BTN is actually running on two of those servers. We wouldn't be able to do this without them, like the live stream and all the back archive and the website, and basically everything we do is running off those two really awesome servers. Never had an issue. And the cool thing is, all they want from us is, brand recognition. Like, go on Twitter, go on the social medias, and talk about them. Like, thank them for supporting us. If you, like, already are a customer, like, reach out to them and say, hey, I'm really happy with what you're doing, and thank BTN for that. And they have really good customer service as well. So if you need anything, if there are any questions, anything is not working, I mean, not that that has happened to us at all, but I've seen some people doing that on Twitter. You can reach out to them, and they've been really responsive and really helpful so far. So yeah, go head over to tsohost.com, and if you sign up for anything, there is a offer code BTN20 that gives you 20% off all that TSO Host offers. And then, we already talked about them, we have the other sponsor, that is IMand Max. And I'm super happy that Callum is always here and like is supporting us as well, like with his expertise. But yeah, they're really great. And Callum, we teased it at the beginning of the show, and I wanted to show that. There was like a phone that came in, and maybe you can tell the story.
So it was actually on the Thursday before the show last week, a client that's used us quite a bit basically came in and said, look, we've got this iPhone 8 Plus, it's been ran over. Can you have a look at it for us? We're not expecting anything, but, can you have a look and see if you can do anything with it? And I posted in the Slack room earlier today, we managed to repair it, and it's looking very, very nice and very new and very shiny. I don't know if you've got any pictures, Patrice.
I've put them up.
A hell of a job. It's had an awful lot done to it. So it's had a new chassis, a new screen, a new battery. I believe it's had a new home button. It's had a new tactic engine. But other than that, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like an entirely new phone. I mean, I didn't even believe that this was fixable. Like,
it's had an awful lot done to it. But, we did it, and yeah, it's back working with the customer. So,
it's so
happy
crazy
days for him.
Yeah, definitely. So I mean, that just proves you, like, no matter how broken it is, you guys, it's gonna try. I mean, in this case, like I said, I'm surprised it worked. Like, I mean, there was barely anything left that you could repair, but you guys did it somehow.
The screen
so basically
was in,
there was just the logic board that was salvageable.
Yeah.
The logic board, the camera, and that was it.
That was it. Yeah, I mean, for the people listening that can see it, like, I mean, it's completely bent, like back and front are shattered, the frame is shattered, the battery is like, I think also was like at least punctured.
Yeah.
It's basically, if you saw it, like, I mean, it's kind of, someone like drove over it. Like, it's It's completely bent with a tank. Yeah, it's completely destroyed. And somehow you guys managed to get it back.
Just about,
yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
I always love projects like that because it's less about just churning it out and more can we do something like that? And,
yeah.
Really happy we could.
Yeah.
Yeah, a tough one. So lots of glass in my fingers.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah, so if you have anything to fix or you're looking, for example, for also refurbished Macs, or I think you guys do data recovery as well.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, then you can head over to imandmacs.com and you get 5% off if you mention BTN as well. So that's really, really awesome. All right, time for the cool thing. Chuck, start us off.
Okay, I'll throw it in the chat room. I just got this. I had ordered this on Kickstarter, and it just came this week. This is the Hyper Juice charger from Hyper, from Sanho. And this is the great thing about this is one of the gallium arsenide.
Gallium nitride.
Not gallium nitride. Sorry. Yes. Where was I going? But it's got two USB-C ports, two USB-A ports, and it's a 100-watt charger, which means that it will drive that beautiful new 16-inch that Doc has, as well as the one that I have. It's smaller than an Apple, 100-watt Apple charger, and yet it's got the extra ports. And the thing, though, that it has that anybody that makes anything that goes in a backpack or a bag should have is it has the fold-out charge plugs to charge it, to plug it in. And that makes it so much nicer because there are no cords or anything involved. Just plug this in the wall and plug everything else into it. So it's $99 right now. Might be a little bit tough to find because it's just coming out of Kickstarter, but definitely one that you want to look at hard.
Yeah, I picked that like a month ago.
Yeah, that's really good.
Well, I just got my Doc, so
but it's awesome, right? Like, I love the weight. It doesn't weigh anything in comparison to the real charger, and this thing is fantastic. It saved my butt the other day.
Yeah,
but I like the fact it doesn't get hot. That's the part that cracks me up. It's like, how does it not get hot? It's a 100-watt charger, and it's nowhere near as hot as the Apple one.
Well, it's the new technology.
Yeah, it's a gallium, whatever you said.
Yeah, exactly. I had to look up. Yeah, you're right. Gallium nitride. Yeah. So definitely go check it out.
It's definitely, I'll second that emotion. It's worth it. It's awesome.
All right. That's really cool. Thank you. Yeah. Callum, what have you got for us this week?
I'll just pop it in the chat. Hold on.
Oh, by the way, if you listeners want to find all the links and everything we talked about today and also our awesome chat, then head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, navigate to the 12th of June, or what was it, February, March, 105th?
Timbuary.
Ah, okay. 170th, something? I don't know.
Yeah, Timbuary 107th.
Yeah, something like that. And yeah, around, what is that, 5:40 p.m. UK time. And you will find all the links. So, sorry, Callum, I just bridged the gap.
You got a lightsaber.
So basically, it was actually inspired from Doc the other week. I've been doing the podcast from home since all of this COVID stuff kicked off, and my lighting's been an issue. I went on Amazon and I wanted to find just a cheap light that would stick to the wall, and it comes with this. So it's double-sided tape, it sticks to the wall, and you attach that on like that and you turn it on. It's £15, which I thought was great for what it was. Charges via USB. It's a decent cheap light. The only issue I've got with it, it's a bit fiddly to turn on and off, but I think it's really good for the money. And
oh, that's cool.
So good I brought two. I'm holding one and I've got one on, so it's good. It's a light.
That's pretty cool.
Next.
Next, okay.
That's cool.
Doc, what have you got for us today?
All right. So these caught me by surprise because I thought for sure they were going to be absolutely horrible. But a buddy of mine says, hey, you have to check out these KZ-ZSM Pros. I was like, what is that? He's like, they're in-ear monitors and they sound absolutely incredible. And I was like, you know, I've always put off buying in-ear monitors because I don't want to spend $300 for something that I'm pretty much only going to use for podcasting and my YouTube channels and stuff like that. And he goes, okay, so just go check them out because they're $20. And I was like, shut up. It can't be good if it's $20.
Yeah.
And they're good. So let me see if I can do this real quick. Okay, these are it. KZ-ZSM Pros. You can get them directly from Amazon. And as you can see here, they're $20.99. They come in blue or a gray or a purple. Now, what's really incredible about these guys is the ear part is removable. But the secret sauce is in this balanced armature type thing. So there's one like a 10 millimeter driver, and then there's another balanced armature to hover your high. So that covers your base, and this covers your lows and mid range. So it has a very, very incredible like frequency response. Like it actually is 7 to 40,000, whereas everything you normally buy in headphone game is 20 to 20,000. So the sub bass is there. It's incredible. The ability to talk, you know, stuff is there. But my favorite part of these is that when you pull them out, I can just go like this, and there's, you can separate the guy from the wire. So what that means is when you, I don't know, break your wires, you haven't broke your expensive $20 headphones. So you can get it with a microphone. With the microphone costs like $3 more. And then where you find out after I started diving into this, this is an entire thing. There's a huge community called HeadFi, and there's a thing called BudgetFi. And there are tons of these out there, tons of different brands, and they're all audiophile level headphones designed to play with Org Vorbis and FLAC files onto these customized, like special digital DAC MP3 players that are playing these files. They're not MP3s. I don't know why I said that. But they're basically lossless audio players. So these are like designed for lossless audio headphones. So just for the sake of how good they are, for how cheap they are, and the mic sounds actually pretty good. And so even for like Callum's listening always with his whites on, if you try these, you'll probably throw your whites in the window. Because they're awesome. Okay, so. And you can actually get it with, if you use your whites with the lightning cable, you can actually buy the extra cable with the lightning or USB-C at the end as well. So you can get it with or without mic. You can get it lightning or USB-C. And then they come in various cores. So like the thicker core cables, so, you know, have better sounding audio because they can pass more dynamic range. But it's absolutely incredible. And probably my next upgrade will be for $30. You can buy the wireless head loop. So for this show, wireless would be okay because, you know, the AirPods and stuff work. But for podcasting, that's enough delay that when you're trying to talk in your own self is talking slightly slower, it throws your head crooked. So that's why we don't use the Bluetooth for monitoring. But I come to find out musicians known about this for years, and somehow I didn't know. But they're awesome. And they look cool.
What are they called again?
KZ-ZSN Pro. If you look on my, no shuffless shaming plug, but if you look on my YouTube channel, it's about 2 videos ago, I do a full, you know, breakdown on how cool they are. And, you know, you should be subscribed anyway, just because I'm cute.
I've just put them in the chat and I brought a pair. So,
perfect.
They're awesome. Thank you. Dude, you're going to love them because you always wear your whites for this kind of stuff. You're going to love them.
Okay. They're comfy. Awesome. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have a look at those. Those look interesting. And last, but by no means least, Jeff, what's your cool thing today?
My cool thing is an iPhone and iPad app that you can pick up for free. And it's called Pastel. And it's an app that Steve Trutten-Smith wrote. And what it does is it lets you create color palettes. And so you can just like pick colors and have it, and then have it build out a palette. You can sample colors from photos or, you know, whatever, and then have it build palettes from that. And then you can export the palettes so you can use them other places. And it's a simple app. It's a one-trick pony, but it's pretty cool. And part of the fun for me with this app was that Steve was taking people through the process of building the app on Twitter as he was doing it. And so he's made this amazing app that is actually very simple for what it does. And it's just it's a cool color palette generator, and you can use it for free. If you want to have it's like a larger number of colors in your palettes, or maybe it's you want to have a higher number of palettes that you saved, then it costs $5. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you just need to make some basic color palettes, you can use it for free, but pay the $5 anyhow to support a developer.
Yeah, I would say so. It's always like, it's not that much, like $5 you can afford once every once in a while at least. All right.
Yeah.
Then thank you, Jeff. My cool thing today is Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba. Because as you can see, I'm doing the Mac show, I'm doing Foodie Flashback, I'm doing all kinds of different podcasts right now. And you need something that where you can record multiple audio streams, you can route audio and so on. And Audio Hijack is really good at that. I can show that on the stream real quick, and I can explain in a second or in 5 seconds. What I do. So I have a rather complex setup, basically recording my audio and Zoom audio separately, recording a combined signal so that I also have both together, and then also sending it out to two different sources. So I'm sending the Zoom audio, for example, to my headphones, and I'm sending the entire combined stream out to the live stream. And all of that is done through basically Audio Hijack and a little tool called Loopback. So it's super, super flexible. You can, it's kind of like building blocks. So you have like audio streams, and you can just put bricks into that or blocks into that to do certain things like, I don't know, increase volume, send it out, like split it up and send it out to multiple devices, record it in different formats. Like you can do all of that, and it's relatively easy to do. You have to understand a little bit like streaming and processing at some point, but it's not too complicated. It's very visual. Like you see when there's a signal going through, you see what's happening, it gets the job done. And I've been recording a lot of podcasts with that very setup, and as I said, it looks complicated, but ultimately it's fairly simple and fairly easy to set up. And I can just recommend it. For example, I'm just capturing audio from Zoom, like something that a lot of people are probably doing, built into Audio Hijack. You can just do that.
Your setup looks a lot like mine, Patrice.
Probably, yeah, because there are too many ways how to do that, right?
Although you have three recorders in yours, mm-hmm. and I have one in mine.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, because I like to edit later on into different audio signals. So I like to do that. It's not exactly cheap, I want to say, but it's also not very expensive. Like for a professional tool... For what it does, it is actually relatively affordable, I want to say. It's it's $70 plus tax. It shows me $84 right now because where I am. And there are sales every now and then. So this is actually the bundle. I think I don't even know whether they sell Audio Hijack separately right now.
They do.
They do. Oh, yeah. It's $59. It's all the way at the top. But they have really good bundles. There's a podcasting bundle that just has everything. I don't know whether you need that, but it's $175. But you can try it. They have, I think, a 7 or 14-day trial. That you can just download it, test it, and see whether it works for you and it's something that is useful. But if you're into podcasting or audio recording at all, I would definitely recommend looking into it, because it's a very flexible tool, even for music recording or anything like that, because you can literally have your a production pipeline where you can change the sound and do whatever you want. And well, yeah, all you have to do is throw some bricks together, basically. All right, gentlemen.
Well, they made it cheaper, actually, because it's only $59 now. It used to be $99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have sales every now and then as well. So like they will do every now and then like really nice sales where it's like $39 instead of $59, for example. I think I got it when they had one of those sales. Yeah.
Thank you. The best part of Hijack that goes unremissed, right? If you say you have to do a lot of Zoom calls or Skype calls or whatever, and you're in a situation where it's a little bit noisy, right? Mm-hmm. You can use the VST plugin setup to add a noise gate or expander. Yep. And a compressor, and you can put that in line. And then so you can say that, you know, normally when you're speaking on the microphone in order to do something like this, probably the quietest that you're ever going to get where it needs to be audible is probably going to be roughly somewhere between negative 36 and negative 28 dB. So if you set your noise floor at around, say, negative 35 dB, all the other noise like the fan or the iMac fan or, you know, whatever else you have going on, it's not going to be high enough to bridge through that gap. So then it's quiet. And then when you go to talk, it'll open up the hole. It'll come out. You can say what you got to say. And then when you stop, it'll be quiet again. And so you don't have to hear the clacking of the keyboard or some of this other stuff, because you can basically put in an inline gate and it changes the game. I mean, that alone fixes most podcasts, because you remember a lot of people, you know, you're in the house now, it's starting to get hot. You got to have the fan on. You got to have the AC on. You got the kids running around in the back. And all you do is do a room print and be like, okay, the kids are under 40 dB, but it's still audible. Let's set the line over here to 37. And then they can run around it. You don't have to, Mikey, you don't have to have the machinations of you know, wanting to strangle your kids on TV. So or at the corporate board meeting. So you can block out the kids and the dog, the neighbor, neighbors fighting. Yeah. Still do your piece.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you can also, like, I use it every day and I do things like, for example, like creating a stereo signal out of the microphone signal, which is usually just mono. Things like that. I use it for every single Zoom call every day, just to improve the audio signal a little bit. Just make it that little bit better. And yeah, increase the volume sometimes. Things like that. It's super helpful. And I mean, yeah, it's probably overkill if you're only doing Zoom calls for like with like one or two people and you don't need to record it. But even then, like, I mean, might be, if you already have it, it might be useful and helpful. All right, gentlemen, thanks for being here. Doc, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me all over the internet at DOCROCK. And of course, you should just be subscribed to the YouTube channel anyway, because, you know, that's just how we do. So you can find that at youtube.com/DocRock.
All right, thank you. And Jeff, where can people find you?
I am easy to find. Just Google me. And then on Twitter and Instagram, I am Jay Gamet. I'm on like all the shows. I'll be back this afternoon for the big show. And there you go. I'm just easy to find.
Every single show on the internet, Jeff is on it. Not really.
Basically.
But, yeah, basically. Thank you, Jeff. Chuck, how about you?
You can find me over at macvoices.com. That's where we talk to a lot of interesting people about tech and Apple tech in specific. Mm-hmm. And you can find me on Twitter as @ChuckJoyner. And it was a blast as always. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, that was great. And you were on Foodie Flashback recently as well. So you can head out and listen to that as well.
I was. And if you listen, you'll get hungry.
Oh, yes. Very. And Callum, last but by no means least, how about you?
Yeah, so you can get hold of us and everything we do at immmax.com. We're on all the socials, Facebook and Twitter, etc. Drop us an email at info@immmax if you have a question. And I'm at O'Hara Callum on Twitter. I'm in the Slack room as well. If you ever have any questions about anything, run over iPhones, drowned Chromebooks or Pixelbooks or whatever it was, I'm more than happy to have a chat with you and see if we can help.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You can find me every week here on the Big Show and on the Mac Show. You can find everything I do on thepatrice.com. And yeah, I already mentioned the Foodie Flashback, where we talk about food and food-related memories. Just had Chuck on it. I think yesterday published another episode with Hawa, I think she will be back next week, and you know, also hear from at least from the Big Show. And yeah, it was also very, very interesting, a very different perspective, like growing up in Nigeria to some extent and in the UK. If you have a story that you want to tell, if you have something interesting, podcaster or not, does not matter. All you need is a like quiet room and a decent microphone, then reach out to me and we'll set something up. You can find this very podcast and all the podcasts we do on britishtechnetwork.com and at British Tech on Twitter. And yeah, with that, thank you so much for listening and talk to you next week.